Kieran, welcome to the Vantage Point podcast. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
You're a fellow podcast host. Why do you think podcasts are such a rapidly growing medium at the moment?
I think that it's just opportunities. I think that there's a lot of space for different conversations, and I think we're all trying to get to somewhere, and it's great to have all these opportunities to be able to log on and listen to different perspectives, different genres, all sorts of different things. And I think podcasting is sort of one of those things that's just a go-to, easy to do. And people do a lot of things like running and driving and all, like there's a time where you had to download something and bring it to your vehicle, and now it's sort of just right there. And I think it's a lovely way to connect on different platforms in different ways, and like another way of reading. I was talking to a fellow parent about this the other day. Just the way the school systems are set up, and not everybody is a reader. Not everybody learns that same way. And so, for many people growing up, reading was in a strong suit and it sort of held a lot of people back. And I think having different opportunities like visuals, and even auditory, I think can help people advance on so many levels. Kids that maybe don't read may get into learning about their mental health through listening to other influencer folks, right? So it's a great opportunity if people can get behind maybe listening to some people's voices or whatnot. If you can get past that, there's some good content out
Yeah.
there.
Yeah. It's like
Yeah, what
finding
do you
people that
think?
you trust, isn't it? I think there's an air that it feels quite genuine when there's a podcast, two people sitting down having a chat. Whereas in a lot of the media we consume, it feels to me like a lot of it's quite artificial, like put on as though people act in a different way online than they would in real life. And a podcast kind of breaks down a couple of those barriers. Why do you think there's such a huge distrust in what we see in the media and now social media at the moment?
I think for me growing up, I always talk about on my platform just having this white girl complex growing up in Canada, not seeing a lot of people from my background, whether they were in the media, in Hollywood and whatnot. And so you lose a sense of connection and you're trying to connect to something so desperately and you'll kind of go with whatever's there. And so the Scarlett Johansons or the famous actresses and actors that we look to, and I think it's just now gotten to a place where technology is great. We have AI, we have all these sorts of things, but there's a lot of discrimination out there and there's a lot of one-sided stories. And I think this whole confirmation bias conversation is starting to come up with like, be mindful of what lanes we're continuing to stay in and what we're continuing to look at, challenge ourselves, because it's easy to have your opinion and your perception and follow those influencers or folks or whatnot. And I think there's a lot of good content out there that maybe isn't as, the Joe Rogans and the Tim Ferriss and these popular podcasters that a lot of us sort of followed. I think there's a lot of everyday humans talking about everyday human stuff, and we need to unpack that more than unpacking a celebrity's life, So I think we just have to find
Yeah.
that balance, and everyone gets there. I think we all get lost and we eventually get to this place where we start to realize, oh yeah, maybe I need to take it back a step. I don't have to constantly be on social media or find, validation through that, because I think that's what holds me back sometimes with my platform is that I'm not always on there. I'm in my 40s, so I didn't grow up with that kind of technology and I didn't really get into it, and I sort of lost that all that. And I think I struggle sometimes because I'm like, oh my gosh, I got to keep up with all these young, trending people. And I at the same time, I'm just trying to get people's stories out. So, I'm like, maybe one day we'll all see that we don't need to be
Yeah.
so into the influence of social media in the way that we can get consumed with, I don't know. Would you
Yeah.
would you see it that way too?
I think validation is the key word there. People get lost in echo chambers. So if you think a certain way, you're fed more stuff from people who think exactly the same way as you, and you think that's how everyone must see the world. And then you start to think anyone who doesn't see the world that way is crazy, right? And then it creates a lot of division and a lot of distrust of basically everyone else, which our little brains aren't really accustomed to dealing with, the massive quantity of data that we suddenly have access to at the tips of our fingers. What do you think it is that so many people will act a certain way online, like act not true to themselves? Do you think it's because they've got some sort of insecurity about like some sort of deep character flaw that they don't want people to see, so they only post the good side of their lives? Why do you think that is?
I think that's a great question. And I think it's a question that maybe we should all just ask ourselves individually, because I think we all have a story and why we do what we do. And answering from as a mother of two young people that are navigating social media, I think there's a lot. I think young people's identity starts to form on a lot of tech platforms, and how I grew up, internet came about when I was in my teens, right? So I think those that sort of grew up with a phone or kind of came out into the world of phone in their hand only know the world in that way. But, you know, I recently did an interview with a 14-year-old young person who was wise beyond their years. And they talked a lot about they're starting to talk a lot in their groups about how they need to scale back and find the balance of, as young people call it, core memory making. So how can we be present and make memories for our youth and our childhood without always being on our phone or always feeling we need to keep up and post these stories. So I think it's, again, this full circle of starting, this balance is starting to come around where people are starting to recognize we have to be mindful of how not to get consumed by that. I don't really know if I answered your question. I might have walked around it, so let me know if I answered that.
But yeah, you got to what I was going to get onto. Where do we go from here? How do you kind of step back away from the internet when it's so in your face, especially for the younger generations, like 10-year-olds, younger than that, all got smartphones, all totally plugged in, connected. It's no coincidence there's a rise of mental health disorders and all this kind of stuff, along with the rise of social media and internet. How do we kind of revert back a little bit or
Yeah.
learn from what used to work for us?
I don't know if we can ever go back, but I think we can
Or
think
adapt,
we
I
all
should say.
again. Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. I think we have to talk. I think we have to remember that there's so many different ways to connect, and being in a physical setting with someone or having a conversation with someone face to face and being present can mean so many different things now. And so I don't think it's entirely bad, because I know my kids are also learning how to multitask in a different way by being online. But also, it's like I said, talking. We have lots of conversations in our household about scrolling apps, our mental health, how to sift through information, how to, you know, like keep our communication open. And I think that's the key, is just talking to each other about, are we having too much social media time? I needed a break over the holidays, and I was talking to a relative. We said Merry Christmas 2 days after Christmas. I appreciated that she was honest, and she's like, I'm sorry, I needed a break from social media. And it's like, no, that's not sorry. That's what we would have done 20 years ago, where we would have just been present with our family, and maybe someone calls you on an old landline, and if not, it's okay, right? So I think this need to always do so much is what a lot of people through COVID are learning, that we can scale it back and not have to do all the things at once, which is what technology does, makes us think we have to do everything all the time.
We fall victim to comparison a lot of the times online. Body dysmorphia. Do you think that the rise of social media and this comparison of photos and fitness and it's become very toxic? What do you do about that?
There's a fair line between what is healthy and what is body image issues. And I grew up with body image issues, so I was sensitive to this. And I think what I appreciate that we're starting to see is more people, in particular women, that have kids, really showing parts of their body and saying, this is what we look like. And yeah, we can go get the surgery and this whole mommy makeover thing, and that's okay. And I respect people. There was a point that I wanted that. And then, you know, you get to this place where you're like, this is also normal. We've gotten to this place where we think we have to look perfect and be perfect. I appreciate the people out there that are using their platforms to be real, to show the scars, to show the hangy skin. But also, you know, take care of yourself. It's not like it's one or the other. You know what I mean? Like, there's that balance in there that we have to find. And I feel like I'm seeing more people out there starting to say, hey, it's okay to look normal. I think, again, there's hope. And I can only speak for myself, but I have my own work that I'm constantly doing, because it's like, I don't look like that, but I don't look like that. So what, I'm going to stop living my life, right? Like, I indulged over Christmas, you know?
I mean, there's a difference between being healthy and looking like a bodybuilder. I mean, I think everyone
Yeah.
falls victim to that. The comparisons you make, you scroll for 5 minutes. If you're into fitness, you're going to see loads of really shredded people all the time. And you're going to think, well, I'm working out every day. Why don't I look like that? Maybe I'm not working hard enough. Or maybe they're taking stuff. Maybe they're genetically just very lucky. Maybe, as you're saying, they've had some sort of operation to enhance what they've already got. And it's like, you
Yeah.
just don't know.
Yeah.
So what's the point in trying to compare? And with the introduction of AI, there really is no boundary as to what the kind of standard set could be. So yeah, I think you're
Yeah.
absolutely right. It's important for there to be kind of real people that you know are real. That gets me onto something that you've been doing to connect with real people, your podcast. And I want to learn about the inception of your podcast, MFU, which you kindly invited me on. What got that started? Where were you in your life that made you want to start a podcast?
So Middle Fingers Up is a passion project. I worked in mental health for many, many, many years. My work was my identity. And so we sort of had you have these life affecting moments, a death, a change, growth, all sorts of things, and realization. I wanted to change my priorities and be more present for my family. Working in mental health can also take away a lot of time because we can't live 9 to 5 when people are in crisis. So I worked a lot. And so I wasn't around my family as much as I'd like to have been. And my kids are at this age where if I don't get involved now, they're going to be teenagers and they're not really going to care. Anyways, I left work and I had some time on my hands. And in that time, I was also processing a pretty crappy experience here that happened. My sister and I experienced a racist experience at a bar, a well-known bar, and it kind of shut me down. It sort of led me down this path, which I was really grateful for because it allowed me to realize that there has to be something that has to come out of something crappy. And so I decided to take charge, and I had so much family behind me supporting this that maybe it was time to build a platform for people of color. And particularly, I'm South Asian, talking about everyday issues that, as a child of immigrant parents, things that I've sort of had to deal with and come to terms with. And I know there's other people out there. What's lovely is when you look at our demographics and stats, it's all sorts of different cultures and ages. And so I think people just really want to connect. People really want to grow. People are curious. And so it's just an opportunity to share stories of everyday people. And, like I said, I always appreciate the stories of David Beckham and Pamela Anderson on Netflix. And you watch these docuseries and you learn about these childhood influencers that you grew up with. But there's like so many influencers walking around. And I think when you hear stories of real people, there's hope. And so this was a crappy experience that just turned into hope. And there's been a lot of growing. And that's my hope. So we'll keep doing it as long as people are interested and want to, keep listening and talking. So folks like you that come on and contribute to the cause, I think that's great. So we'll go as far as we can.
That's awesome. Turn a negative into a positive like that. I know you've already done a good job of explaining that whole thing. You dedicated, I think it was your first episode, you dedicated, almost dedicated entirely to telling that story. So I'd suggest if anyone's interested in that, go and listen to it. Am I right in saying it's the first episode you posted?
Episode one, you
Right.
people don't tip. Yeah, go listen, and we're open to feedback, and so we want to be inclusive of anyone and everyone. So a lot of our guests come on through suggestions and recommendations. And also, I have a huge UK following, so there's a lot of people in Europe, particularly the UK, that feel connected to this podcast, and I really, really appreciate that. I've had a few guests on from different parts of the UK, and so I think that's been great. And you know how it is, we only have so much time in a day, so when people dedicate time to, vantage point and listen to your podcast, it's quite
Always
meaningful
appreciated.
that, yeah, right?
Yeah, I think maybe you've got an audience here because we can understand Canadian a little bit better than we can understand some of the American accents. Do you think that there's a better way that we could use social media than our platforms, our podcasting platforms, the stuff we share, more as a tool, as I see you doing, to unite people rather than divide people? In your opinion, what are some ways that the everyday kind of person could do that rather than being as negative as some people tend to be?
Yeah, I think that's going to always happen. And I think the key is, we're going to be on social media. We're going to visit different platforms. Can we challenge ourselves and go to sites and listen to folks, follow people that maybe we wouldn't normally hang out with or know or get to know? People have to kind of look at what's happening around the world. And social media can be really helpful for that, but only if we want to challenge ourselves and ask ourselves, how come I see this way and that person sees it that way? What is that about? What's really happening? Social media can be a nice way to connect. We learned that over COVID, right? With working and continuing to manage the world in the way that everyone was able to. And so I think there can be a lot of good. But the other day, I had my first not great response back to something I posted on TikTok. And I was like, oh, okay. So that's that. Now that that's happened, that's good. Because I think people are going to be negative. People are going to see how they are. But everyone's entitled to their opinion. I don't really care what you think about the things that I'm doing out there. I just hope that we're all able to do our thing without hurting each other.
You can like someone and disagree with an opinion they hold.
Yeah.
You don't have to
Yeah.
think of everyone's opinions as who they are, whereas online, that's all you
Yeah.
tend to see of people. And it's an interesting point you
Yeah.
bring up in lockdown of how social media, in some ways, united people, but I would say in a lot of ways, it divided people. And I think the reason is
Yes.
that you see so much of the disasters going on in the world, these incomprehensible, terrible things that happen in all around the world. almost every day. It's not natural. It's not something we're supposed to know about. We're supposed to know, human species, we're supposed to know if maybe another tribe's invading our village or if maybe a volcano went off over there somewhere local to us, right? There's always going to be wars happening all over the place. We're not supposed to be aware of all of them because we can't comprehend the scale of all that. And so this is another thing that I think that contributes to the rise in depression and anxieties, because people think, well, the world is terrible. All this stuff's happening all the time and I'm watching it all in real time, because that's what's pushed to the front, and you can forget that a whole load of good stuff's happening as well.
There's more good out there than those people, and we seem to give them more power.
Definitely.
Right. So I think it's, again, we've been saying this throughout the episode, like a lot of balance. It's just finding the balance in what's happening out there. And you know what? I'll leave it at that.
I wanted to get inside your head a little bit, how you run MFU, and for people listening, how they could potentially set up a podcast. That I'd like to sort of throw ideas at you, you throw ideas at me.
Okay,
and yeah, maybe people
cool.
can go away and start their own podcast or something.
Or send us messages and tell us we could do it a lot easier.
Yeah, all that as well. Maybe I mean, that'd be much appreciated. Describe to me the process, start to finish, the creative process that goes into Middle Fingers Up.
I think the first and foremost thing is everything has to be done by being genuine and authentic. So if it doesn't feel right, if it's not part of who I am or our family values, like as an MFU values, it's not going to come out well. So any topic, anything that I'm curious about, how I prepare all has to do with something that I know very little about and something that I'm a little maybe anxious to know about, or that I know I need to do my due diligence and learn more about. That's sort of the foundation. That's how we work. I could have been way better at my job, probably in parenting and all the things in life, if I learned earlier how to ask for help. I'm not good at it. So MFU has taught me, A, it takes a village, and B, if you don't ask for help, how are people going to help you move forward? And so all our guests, all of our listeners, everyone has had a role in where we are today. I think it's sort of those abstract things of just those values, like, okay, so what do we believe in? What do we want to know more about? Listening for what's happening out in the community. Like, what are the issues? I know in the South Asian community, a lot of addiction, a lot of violence. So is there a way that we can inspire by sharing stories? But in terms of like the actual technical stuff, I get the best job. I get to put some makeup on, put a nice shirt on, and sit before guests and interview them. And some of that comes from my counseling background, just being curious and asking questions. The work I feel that really is the hard work is what my husband does. He does the editing. So that's the process that
Andy,
I think takes a lot of detail. You do everything on your own, right? I have a friend who goes through my 2-hour episodes. So we're long form and goes through each thing. And, you know, our goal is to protect the dignity of our guest. And so those ums and maybe even sometimes some things that we say in conversation that maybe later we don't want it, you know, to have out in the recording. So we'll listen through and edit and that sort of thing. And then, yeah, a lot of it is like people being curious and saying, hey, I wonder if so-and-so would be a good guest for you. I've gotten to like my first famous guest was like my 4th episode and is a local radio host. Who am I? My studio's in my basement in my house. He was so inspiring because right off the bat, he's like, yeah, sure, I'll come on. And he came over and we recorded together. And I think from there, it's like learning you can ask for help and finding the courage to reach out to people and saying, I have an idea, no pressure. Would you be interested?
It's always in the back of my mind. Like when I send someone an invite to come on, I'm like, oh, are they going to say no? It's going to be kind of embarrassing.
Yeah.
You know, that message is always going to be.
But people love it. We think that because we have imposter syndrome, but people like appreciate being asked for their time. You probably had more people say yes than say no, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. We get so fearful of it. However, and here I am saying this to you, but to, you know, I have to go email a bunch of people that I've been avoiding for weeks because I'm afraid to ask them.
I think a lot of people, they're surprised that they would be asked. And I'm thinking, you're like an expert in your field. I'm surprised no one's asked you before. So I was very grateful that you agreed to come on, but I was kind of hoping you would since you asked me first.
I was the easy one.
I was thinking
she
better say yes
to
me.
The work was for me. See, that's the thing. Exactly. I had to do the hard work by reaching out. But we have a cool story because you and I started around the same time and we took a risk. Different parts of the world started having the same kind of curiosity of getting humans together and learning with each other. And when Vantage Point came up on my feed, I thought that was so cool because we had the same sort of start and you see the followers slowly building and you're like, this is cool, like good for you. So I think that's what I love about you asked about podcasting in the beginning is it's a cool community. There's a lot of invitation and support for each other. It's not, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're going to start this or do this. It's like how cool it is. Like, yeah, let's join each other and record together and share our resources.
I think people who listen to podcasts in general are the sort of people who are willing to open their minds a bit more than just the average kind of TikTok scroller. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for
Different
sure. Yeah.
audience,
Yeah.
or sometimes the same audience. I'm sure it
Yes.
crosses over somewhere.
Yeah.
Do you ever worry, or do you think your guests worry how they would come across and whether you'll edit them fairly? Do you think people are scared to put their trust in you that they'll come across well?
I can appreciate if they do because I get anxious. This is my fourth time being invited on. And like I said, I'm a better host than a guest, and I get the different kind of nervous as a guest. So I can only imagine that guests coming on would. But I've had very few that have been, I need to listen to it before it goes out. I've never had to send it to someone prior to it coming out. People have trusted the process. And I think that's because we're just transparent from the beginning. We were very detailed in sharing the process, especially for someone that's never experienced. Like some guests have been on podcasts before, and so they kind of get a sense, even leading up to where it's going to be recorded, because it's like you want a safety plan. If I'm going to someone's house, I don't know you, right? And so I just try to think of it from that perspective of being transparent, and people seem to be more willing. But I've had a couple that have been really nervous, and I get it. I understand that, right? Because sometimes you don't realize what you're saying in the moment, and you think you're saying it a certain way. Like I could think I'm being really kind and appreciative right now, and then when I listen to this, I might send you an apology and say I was like the worst guest. I was so rude to you. Sometimes you don't realize that, right? But for the most part, yeah, they're.
I'm going to have to steal your prestigious middle fingers up segment, and I'm going to ask you, Karen McKay, what are you putting your middle fingers up to for 2024?
I'm going to put my middle fingers up to what I said a few minutes ago about not asking for help. I think that's something that I want to pay more attention to. People want to help. People like being asked. I love being asked, but I hate asking. So I think that some of that has to do with ego, and some of that has to do with, rejection and all that. So for me, middle fingers up to getting in the way of opportunities when we don't reach out, we don't ask for help, or we answer for people, we assume for people that they don't want to. That's what I would put my middle fingers up to. What about you? You have to do one too now.
I think if people want to know what mine is, they're going to have to go and listen to my episode with you because I explained it in good detail on there.
Well, there you go. That's great. That's a great link.
Karen, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.